This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hey, you're with Rach Jackson-Dean for The Drive Home this Tuesday, and it's time for...
It's not J Law. It's not J Lo. It's Joy Law.
It is, in fact, time for the Joy Law segment. We are joined once again in the studios by the team from KHQ Lawyers. It is Chris, and it is a newcomer. It's Bronwyn. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Now, Chris, we know all about you. You're a family lawyer from KHQ Lawyers. Tell us about Bronwyn.
Bron is a very integral part of my team. She's my right-hand woman, I'd like to say. She's one of the junior members of our department, and we're just lucky to work with such great women.
Absolutely. It's your first time on Joy, Bronwyn.
So it is. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So yesterday, the 20th of November, was the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Yeah.
So we thought we might just have a bit of a chat about some of the legal issues facing our transgender community.
Yeah, so especially for our trans youth. So we're going to go into the teens today and start off with who's responsible for young trans children or teenagers?
So generally it's their parents, and I'll throw to Bron in a second, but there's only so much as parents that we can consent to, and it all really goes around what we call parental responsibility.
So as a starting point, there's a presumption that once a child is born, both parents have equal shared parental responsibility for the child until the child turns 18, which means they both have a role in making major decisions about the child, including where the child goes to school, religious and cultural upbringing of the child, and medical decisions. But there are some special medical treatments which cannot be performed without a court order, even if the treating medical professionals and the child's parents all consent to the treatment or procedure. And this is because it's considered beyond the scope of parental responsibility. So certain aspects of gender reassignment are included in this category. And that's because these treatments can be permanent, significantly life-altering, and there can be serious consequences if the wrong decision is made.
And I'm imagining that those types of decisions around surgeries or medical intervention aren't things that are gone into lightly, nor at a young age.
No, and historically, we saw the earliest case, I think, was around 2003, and we've had so many since then, parents applying to the court for treatments for their children, which is amazing, can I tell you? Imagine how difficult it would be as a parent trying to get your head around that. And we've seen so many people apply, and it's just awful, the delay in time, the cost, everything, and often, 9 times out of 10, time is of the essence with these kids.
And I think probably just, we're not talking, I've used the word surgery, I just want to correct myself It's medical treatment, and often it's medical like puberty treatment. Blockers and those things.
So there's actually two stages that the court looks at or that they define it in. The first one is what they call delaying onset of puberty, which is what you were talking about. So that's stage one. Stage two is the administration of estrogen or testosterone. And it's the second stage which can cause the adolescent. So it causes them to obviously develop the puberty of the person, the gender which they identify, but there are some irreversible effects of that, and that's where the court says, no, you need us to step in here.
But if we go back in time a little bit before that, if a child does express to their parent that they identify as the other gender, do both parents need to make a decision to allow the child to identify as that gender, so to wear the clothing of that gender?
It's really tough. I was speaking with a friend of mine before, and she was saying at her daughter's school there's a young girl that identifies as a boy, and it's an all-girls school, and the little girl wears a male outfit, a male uniform, and some of the parents are up in arms. This is an all-female school, and I said to my friend, I actually said, well, they're not legally male, so they can go to that school up until they have the gender reassignment surgery, and we're talking about a 9-year-old here. A lot of the time it will cause conflict between parents, and you'll often have one parent that leaves, and the parent that's supportive will continue to be the primary carer of that child.
I just want to question about applying to the courts for these medical procedures.
when you say the courts, does that mean that there is like a sole judge who gets to decide on this? Or is it like there's a group of doctors, health professionals, everything that get to decide? Like, how is this decision made? Because, you know, there could be a judge who is homophobic and could make a decision based on that. Could there not?
So when we talk about the process of actually making an application to the court, there is a whole raft of sort of special evidence that you would require to make your case. So that does involve reports of paediatricians,
psychologists,
fertility specialists, that sort of thing, who all would have to agree that the treatment is in the child's best interest if it's to go ahead. All of that evidence would be put before the judge or judges making that decision, and they would have to weigh all that up in terms of what they think would be best for the child.
And it's the family court only. When I shouldn't have said courts, it's the family court only. There is only one judge that presides at any one time, but it could be any number of the judges that preside over it. But the family law rules are so prescriptive that if you provide all of the evidence that they require, they can't really say no. They're very, very good. It's a specialised system there.
Oh, that's good. That brings some relief.
Absolutely. We'll talk a little bit more about the legal issues facing transgender youth coming up next. If you have a question, send us a message on 0427 JOY 949 or on air at joy.org.au. Well, with Rach Jackson-Dean for The Drive Home, we are with the team from KHQ Lawyers on Joy Law, our Joy Law segment. We're talking about transgender youth, given that yesterday, the 20th of November, was Transgender Day of Remembrance. And we're talking to Chris and we're talking to Bronwyn about the legal issues that face transgender youth and making petition to the family court.
At the moment, any parent can make a decision about the stage one procedure, and that is the blockers for the onset of puberty. The issue is you have to go to the court for stage two, and what's really ridiculous.
Stage two being
the taking of estrogen and testosterone.
Right.
The issue though is that even if you have both parents consenting, you have all of your medical team consenting, and you have a child that's of an age where they can make their own decisions, and the doctor say, yeah, this kid's got is competent, you still have to go to court and say to the court, we need a determination that this child is competent to make that decision. Then once you've got that, the child can go back and make the decision. So regardless, you still have to go to court for stage two.
And even when you're filing that application, you then will have to wait for a hearing date. That could take many months. It could be 8 months. It could be longer. You're having to pay filing fees, legal costs, and just go through the stress of that entire process. And we know that members of the transgender community have quite a high rate of suicide, self-harm, mental health issues. And the delay and the expense of being forced to go through this process just to get the treatment that you need obviously weighs heavily on that community.
Yeah. And unfortunately, good old Australia is the only country that we require consent of a court for stage two treatment.
Yeah. Some really big issues there. So, look, thanks for joining us, Bronwyn and Chris from KHQ Lawyers.
Thanks,
we look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Can't wait.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.